This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Psychology, A Very Short Introduction by Jillian Butler and Frieda McManus, narrated by Tamara Marston.
Chapter 1. What is psychology? How do you study it? In 1890, William James, the American philosopher and physician, and one of the founders of modern psychology, defined psychology as the science of mental life. And this definition provides a good starting point for our understanding, even today. We all have a mental life, and therefore have some ideas about what this means, even though it can be studied in rats or monkeys as well as in people, and the concept remains an elusive one. Like most psychologists, William James was particularly interested in human psychology, which he thought consisted of certain basic elements: thoughts and feelings, a physical world which exists in time and space, and a way of knowing about these things. For each of us, this knowledge is primarily personal and private. It comes from our own thoughts, feelings, and experience of the world, and may or may not be influenced by scientific facts about these things. For this reason, it is easy for us to make judgments about psychological matters using our own experience as a touchstone. We behave as amateur psychologists when we offer opinions on complex psychological phenomena, such as whether brainwashing works, or when we espouse as facts our opinions about why other people behave in the ways that they do, think they are being insulted, feel unhappy, or suddenly give up their jobs. However, problems arise when two people understand these things differently. Formal psychology attempts to provide methods for deciding which explanations are most likely to be correct, or for determining the circumstances under which each applies. The work of psychologists helps us to distinguish between inside information, which is subjective and may be biased and unreliable, and the facts, between our preconceptions and what is true in scientific terms. Psychology, as defined by William James, is about the mind or brain. But although psychologists do study the brain, we do not understand nearly enough about its workings to be able to comprehend the part that it plays in the experience and expression of our hopes, fears, and wishes, or in our behavior during experiences as varied as giving birth or watching a football match. Indeed, it is rarely possible to study the brain directly. So psychologists have discovered more by studying our behavior and by using their observations to derive hypotheses about what is going on inside us. Psychology is also about the ways in which organisms, usually people, use their mental abilities, or minds, to operate in the world around them. The ways in which they do this have changed over time, as their environment has changed. Evolutionary theory suggests that if organisms do not adapt to a changing environment, they will become extinct. Hence the sayings, adapt or die, and survival of the fittest. The mind has been, and is still being, shaped by adaptive processes. This means that there are evolutionary reasons why our minds work the way that they do. For instance, the reason why we are better at detecting moving objects than stationary ones may be because this ability was useful in helping our ancestors to avoid predators. It is important for psychologists, as well as for those working in other scientific disciplines, such as biology and physiology, to be aware of those reasons. A difficulty inherent in the study of psychology is that scientific facts should be objective and verifiable, but the workings of the mind are not observable in the way that those of an engine are. In everyday life, they can only be perceived indirectly and have to be inferred from what can be observed, in other words, behavior. The endeavor of psychology is much like that involved in solving a crossword puzzle. It involves evaluating and interpreting the available clues and using what you already know to fill in the gaps. Furthermore, the clues themselves have to be derived from careful observation based on accurate measurement, analyzed with all possible scientific rigor, and interpreted using logical and reasoned arguments, which can be subjected to public scrutiny. Much of what we want to know in psychology, how we perceive, learn, remember, think, solve problems, feel, develop, differ from each other, and interrelate, has to be measured indirectly. And all these activities are multiply determined, meaning that they are influenced by several factors rather than by a single one. For example, think of all the things that may affect your response to a particular situation, losing your way in a strange town. In order to find out which factors are the important ones, a number of other confounding factors have, somehow, to be ruled out. Complex interactions are the norm rather than the exception in psychology, and understanding them depends on the development of sophisticated techniques and theories. Psychology has the same goals as any other science: to describe, understand, predict, and learn how to control or modify the processes that it studies. Once these goals have been achieved, it can help us to understand the nature of our experience and also be of practical value. For instance, psychological findings have been useful in fields as varied as developing more effective methods of teaching children to read, in designing control panels for machines that reduce the risk of accidents, and in alleviating the suffering of people who are emotionally distressed. Historical background. Although psychological questions have been discussed for centuries, they have only been investigated scientifically in the past 150 years. Early psychologists relied on introspection, that is, the reflection on one's own conscious experience, to find answers to psychological questions. These early psychological investigations aimed to identify mental structures. But following the publication by Charles Darwin of The Origin of Species in 1859, the scope of psychology expanded to include the functions as well as the structures of consciousness. Mental structures and functions are still of central interest to psychologists today, but using introspection for studying them has obvious limitations. As Sir Francis Galton pointed out, it leaves one a helpless spectator of but a minute fraction of automatic brain work. Attempting to grasp the mind through introspection, according to William James, is like turning up the gas quickly enough to see how the darkness looks. Contemporary psychologists, therefore, prefer to base their theories on careful observations of the phenomena in which they are interested, such as the behavior of others, rather than on reflections upon their own experience. In 1913, John Watson published a General Behaviorist Manifesto for Psychology, which asserted that, if psychology was to be a science, the data on which it was based must be available for inspection. This focus on observable behavior, rather than on internal or unobservable mental events, was linked with a theory of learning and an emphasis on reliable methods of observation and experimentation, which still influence psychology today. The behaviorist approach suggests that all behavior is the result of conditioning, which can be studied by specifying the stimulus and observing the response to it, or SR psychology. What happens in between these two, the intervening variables, was thought unimportant by the earlier behaviorists, but has since become a prime source of experimental hypotheses. Testing hypotheses about these things has enabled psychologists to develop increasingly sophisticated theories about mental structures, functions, and processes. Two other significant influences on the development of psychology early this century came from Gestalt psychology and from psychoanalysis. Gestalt psychologists working in Germany made some interesting observations about the ways in which psychological processes are organized. They showed that our experience differs from what would be expected if it were based solely on the physical properties of external stimuli, and concluded that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. For example, when two lights in close proximity flash in succession, what we see is one light that moves between the two positions. This is how films work. Recognizing that mental processes contribute in this way to the nature of experience laid the groundwork for contemporary developments in cognitive psychology, which is the branch of psychology that studies such internal processes. Sigmund Freud's theories about the continuing influence of early childhood experiences and about the theoretical psychological structures he named the ego, id, and superego drew attention to unconscious processes. These processes, which include unconscious and unacceptable wishes and desires, are inferred, for example, from dreams, slips of the tongue, and mannerisms, and are thought to influence behavior. In particular, unconscious conflicts are hypothesized to be a prime cause of psychological distress, which psychoanalysts can help to relieve by assisting in their expression, and by using psychodynamic theories based on Freud's work to interpret patients' behaviors. The unobservable nature of the mental processes on which Freud's theories are based makes the theories difficult to test scientifically. And for many years, the more scientific and the more interpretive branches of psychology developed independently, along separate routes. Contemporary psychology is at an exciting stage today, partly because these divisions are, in places, breaking down. Psychology is not the only discipline that has had to tackle questions about how we can know about things that we cannot observe directly. Think of physics and biochemistry. Technological and theoretical advances have assisted this process, and such developments have changed, and are continuing to change, the nature of psychology as a science. Psychologists can now use sophisticated measuring instruments, electronic equipment, and improved statistical methods to analyze multiple variables and huge quantities of data, using computers and all the paraphernalia involved in information technology. Studying the mind as an information processing system has enabled them to find out more about things that cannot be observed, and the many variables that intervene between stimulus and response, such as those involved in attention, thinking, and decision-making. They are now in a position to base their hypotheses about these things not solely on hypothetical theories arising from introspection, as did the early analysts, or solely on observations of behavior, as did early behaviorists, but on combinations of these things backed up by more reliable and valid methods of observation and measurement. These developments have produced a revolution in psychology as the science of mental life, and their continued development means that there is still much that remains to be discovered. Psychology as a science. Psychology is a science in that it makes use of scientific methods wherever possible, but it must also be remembered that psychology is a science at an early stage of development. Some of the things in which psychologists are interested cannot be wholly understood using scientific methods alone, and some would argue that they never will be. For example, the humanistic school of psychology places greater emphasis on individuals' accounts of their subjective experiences, which cannot easily be quantified or measured. Here is a list of some of the main methods that are typically used by psychologists. First, laboratory experiments. A hypothesis derived from a theory is tested under controlled conditions, which are intended to reduce bias in both the selection of subjects used and in the measurements of the variables being studied. Findings should be replicable but may not generalize to more real-life settings. Next, field experiments. Hypotheses are tested outside laboratories in more natural conditions, but these experiments may be less well controlled, harder to replicate, or may not generalize to other settings. Next, correlational methods. Assessing the strength of the relationship between two or more variables, such as reading level and attention span. This is a method of data analysis rather than data collection. Next, observations of behavior. The behavior in question must be clearly defined, and methods of observing it should be reliable. Observations must be truly representative of the behavior that is of interest. Next, case studies. Particularly useful as a source of ideas for future research, and for measuring the same behavior repeatedly under different conditions. Next, self-report and questionnaire studies. These provide subjective data based on self-knowledge or introspection, and their reliability can be ensured through good test design and by standardizing the tests on large representative samples. Finally, interviews and surveys. Also useful for collecting new ideas and for sampling the responses of the population in which the psychologist is interested. Any science can only be as good as the data on which it is based. Hence, psychologists must be objective in their methods of data collection, analysis, and interpretation, in their use of statistics, and in the interpretation of the results of their analyses. An example will illustrate how, even if the data collected are valid and reliable, pitfalls can easily arise in the way they are interpreted. If it is reported that 90% of child abusers were abused themselves as children, it is easy to assume that most people who were abused as children will go on to become child abusers themselves. And indeed, such comments often reach the media. In fact, the interpretation does not follow logically from the information given. The majority of people who have themselves been abused do not repeat this pattern of behavior. Psychologists, as researchers, have therefore to learn both how to present their data in an objective way that is not likely to be misled, and how to interpret the facts and figures reported by others. This involves a high degree of critical, scientific thinking. The main branches of psychology. It has been argued that psychology is not a science because there is no single governing paradigm or theoretical principle upon which it is based. Rather, it is composed of many loosely allied schools of thought. But this is perhaps inevitable because of its subject matter. Studying the physiology, biology, or chemistry of an organism provides the kind of exclusive focus that is not available to psychologists, precisely because they are interested in mental processes, which cannot be separated from all the other aspects of the organism. So there are, as one might expect, many approaches to the study of psychology, ranging from the more artistic to the more scientific, and the different branches of the subject may seem at times like completely separate fields. Here are the main branches of psychology. First, abnormal, the study of psychological dysfunctions and of ways of overcoming them. Next, behavioral, emphasizes behavior, learning, and the collection of data which can be directly observed. next biological, and comparative. The study of the psychology of different species, inheritance patterns, and determinants of behavior. Next, cognitive, focuses on finding out how information is collected, processed, understood, and used. Next, developmental, how organisms change during their lifespan. Next, individual differences, studying large groups of people so as to identify and understand typical variations, for example, in intelligence or personality. Next, physiological, focuses on the influence of physiological state on psychology and on the workings of the senses, nervous system, and brain. Finally, social, studying social behavior and interactions between individuals and groups. In practice, there is considerable overlap between the different branches of psychology and between psychology and related fields. Close relatives of psychology. There are some fields with which psychology is frequently confused, and indeed there are good reasons for the confusion. First, psychology is not psychiatry. Psychiatry is a branch of medicine which specializes in helping people to overcome mental disorders. It therefore concentrates on what happens when things go wrong, on mental illness and mental distress. Psychologists also apply their skills in the clinic, but they are not medical doctors, and combine with their focus on psychological problems and distress a wide knowledge of normal psychological processes and development. They are not usually able to prescribe drugs. Rather, they specialize in helping people to understand, control, or modify their thoughts or behavior in order to reduce their suffering and distress. Second, psychology is often confused with psychotherapy. Psychotherapy is a broad term referring to many different types of psychological therapy, but referring to no particular one exclusively. Although the term is often used to refer to psychodynamic and humanistic approaches to therapy, it also has a wider, more general use. For example, there has recently been a great expansion of behavioral and cognitive behavioral psychotherapy. Third, there are many related fields in which psychologists may work or collaborate with others, such as psychometrics, psychophysiology, psycholinguistics, and neuropsychology. Psychologists also play a part in broader, developing fields to which others contribute as well, such as cognitive science and information technology, or the understanding of psychophysiological aspects of phenomena such as stress, fatigue, or insomnia. Psychology, as used in the clinic, may be well known, but it is just one branch of a much bigger subject. The aims and structure of this book. Our aim is to explain and to illustrate why psychology is interesting, important, and useful today. And therefore, this book focuses on contemporary material. As most psychologists are interested in people, examples will predominantly be drawn from human psychology. Nevertheless, the book starts from the assumption that the minimum condition for having a psychology, as opposed to being a plant or an amoeba, is the possession of a mental control system, in informal terms, a mind, that enables the organism to operate both in and on the world. Once the brain and nervous system have evolved sufficiently to be used as a control center, there are certain things it must be able to do: pick up information about the world outside itself, keep track of that information, store it for later use, and use it to organize its behavior so as, crudely speaking, to get more of what it wants and less of what it does not want. Different organisms do these things in different ways. For example, they have different kinds of sense organs. And yet, some of the processes involved are similar across species. For example, some types of learning and some expressions of emotion. One of the central concerns of psychologists is to find out how these things come about. So, chapters 2 through 5 will focus on four of the most important questions that psychologists ask. What gets into the mind? What stays in the mind? How do we use what is in the mind? And why do we do what we do? They aim to show how psychologists find out about the processes involved in perception and attention in Chapter 2, in learning and memory in Chapter 3, in thinking, reasoning, and communicating in Chapter 4, and in motivation and emotion in Chapter 5, and attempt to explain the ways in which they work for us. These chapters focus on generalities, on the commonalities between people. They aim to describe our mental furniture and to look at some of the hypotheses psychologists have made and at a few of the models they have constructed to explain their observations. Psychologists are also interested in the differences between people and in the determinants of their obvious variety. If we are going to understand people better, we need to disentangle general influences from individual ones. If there were only general patterns and rules, and we all had the same mental furniture, then all people would be psychologically identical, which obviously they are not. So how do we explain how they come to be the way they are? And how do we understand their differences, their difficulties, and their interactions? Chapter 6 asks, is there a set pattern of human development? Chapter 7 is about individual differences and asks, can we categorize people into types? Chapter 8 asks, what happens when things go wrong? And focuses on abnormal psychology. And Chapter 9 asks, how do we influence each other? And describes social psychology. Finally, in Chapter 10, we ask, what is psychology for? Describe the practical uses to which psychology has been put, and offer some speculations about the types of advance that might be expected in the future.